Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat.
Hello, good people. Episode 45 of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show coming up. This one is with a very close friend of mine, Martin Lowe, who's, I can say straight up, one of the best human beings I know. Just a lovely man, great jiu-jitsu, just great insights onto life and a fantastic energy. Before we chat to Martin, I just want to remind you guys, please support the show in any way you can. Some of the ways to do that are to leave a review on iTunes, to check out my online dojo, The Master Academy, which is at jiu-jitsumasteracademy.com. I teach all my very best jiu-jitsu instructional material there, and it also has exclusive podcasts that you won't hear anywhere else. We're also doing a free trial for the Master Academy at the moment, and if you send me an email, nick@jiu-jitsubrother.com, that's nic@jiu-jitsubrother.com, I'll set up a free trial membership for you. Also, if you want to check out any of our apparel, including our cult classic Seeker Gi, head on over to store.jiu-jitsubrother.com. And you can get 10% off that and any of the other goods, including different books and DVDs on Jiu-Jitsu there. Just use the coupon code PODCAST at checkout to get that discount. And finally, if you're kind of guy who likes to experiment with supplements and things of that nature, please head on over to truthnaturals.co.uk and try any of their fantastic CBD-based products. If you use the coupon code JJBTRUTH, you'll get a good discount on all their stuff too. Okay, guys, without further ado, here is episode 45, the one and only Mr. Martin Lowe. Enjoy. Hey, everyone, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and I'm joined by a very close friend of mine, someone who I've known must be going on 15 years now. It is Martin Lowe, who I'm speaking to from Manchester. Is that correct, Martin?
That's right, Manchester, England.
I lived in England for a long time, almost 10 years, and there was always this preconception that the people from the north of England were more fun than the people from the south. And I can say that Martin is an example of that. It's quite a small data set. I don't know that many northerners, but he is definitely one of the coolest, friendliest, most charming dudes around. And I'm so happy to have you on the show. It's been something I've been wanting to do for a long time, Martin. Welcome, dude.
Thank you, but you realize that all the Southerners have just turned off now.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the Southerners, but the Northerners are a hell of a lot of fun. So, Martin, you are actually one of the first people, I would say you're probably one of the first people that got their blue belt in the UK.
Right.
I mean, you were there back in the beginning, like when Mauricio Gomez, Roger's father, he started teaching in the UK, like... I mean, I'd say, when was this in the...
Correct.
In the...
It was 98, I think he arrived. And that's when I moved to Birmingham.
Okay.
And I moved there. Yeah, I actually moved there. Ended up settling down there. I got a girlfriend in Birmingham. I was at university in Manchester.
Okay.
And I was going down every weekend. And then eventually I moved there to train with Mauricio.
Okay. And tell me a little bit more about that. It's my understanding, like, I mean, Mauricio is a hell of a tough dude. He's a little bit older now. But, like, I mean, back then he must have been in his 40s, I would say.
Yeah, he was a scary man. Yeah, he was good fun. I just got great. It was nice. When you said we're going to do this podcast, and I just started thinking back about the old days and remembering Hodja coming over when he was 16 and a blue belt.
Uh-huh.
And we were training in a church. It was a church hall in Birmingham, and it was freezing cold. In the winter, there was holes in the roof. So we would actually train with gloves on and socks. And I remember there was about 10 of us. And it was a special time because nobody else in the country really knew about this. We had Chen in London, so he was already there. And so there was a group of guys in London training already. There's a few guys who'd been to Brazil and were ahead. But up in the north, this was a special little thing we had. So, yeah, it was exciting.
Yeah, that must have been cool. I know Mauricio, I mean, then you moved away from jiu-jitsu because of an injury and you had you were focusing on your career, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But I would chat to Mauricio because you and I kept in touch and he hadn't seen you for a few years. And whenever I'd bring your name up, he would always say, Martin was one of my very best students. And if he had stuck jiu-jitsu out, he would have easily been a black belt. And one of the things I noticed about you, we sparred a couple of times, is just physically you're a very gifted guy on all levels. Like you are the consummate athlete. Like your bone structure and your balance and your flexibility is just, I don't think I've ever met anyone who surpasses you with like just natural genetic ability. So
Thanks, man.
it's my pleasure. It's always
That's probably why I got injured. The more flamboyant the style, the more risky it can be on your joints, especially at 6 foot 3, 200 pounds.
Yeah, for sure, dude. I mean, and that's the funny thing is you're a lanky dude, but strong as hell, dude. Like, so it's quite surprising to me that you got injured, and we'll talk about that another day.
You know what's funny though, Nick? You mentioned that, and one thing I love about jiu-jitsu is that either you are a black belt or you're not. Either you win the fight or you don't. So that was a nice compliment. What I love about jiu-jitsu is you are or you're not. So saying, oh, you could have been great, is almost doing disservice to the guys who actually go and do it.
I hear you. I hear you. But
Know what I mean? It's something nice about the sport in that way that it's very honest, you know?
I always say that to you more to keep you motivated, that like don't give up.
Right.
But man, tell me a little bit. You've spent some time training in Brazil as well. Is that correct, if I'm not mistaken?
January 2001, I lived there for 7 months. I went out there with Steve Campbell, who now runs Stealth BJJ, in Oldham, actually, near Manchester. And it was a hell of a time. I gave up a job in Birmingham. I was working at a semiconductor company. And so I remember one of the executives saying, he goes, "Can you earn money at that? Why you're going to do what?" So oh man, it was a brilliant time. Hodja Gracie was over there. There was Holletta. There was Nino Schembri. I was having private lessons with Soccer. It was a special time.
I remember you telling me this. One of my, I think you were the person who told me this. You were training there. I think it was at Gracie Barra in Rio. Is that correct? And
Carlinhos.
Roger sold you. Roger was like a young dude. He was like 17 or 18 or something like that. He sold you one of his gis,
Oh, I've still got that baby.
which I mean, that blows my mind, dude. That just absolutely blows my mind to think of Roger being that like young kid. He needs a bit of cash, you know, like sells the gringo one of his gis. I just think that's
Do you know,
fantastic.
I don't know if he even sold it to me. Hodge has always been really gracious to me. I've got a feeling he might have even given me that back in the day.
Roger is one of the most humble, gracious is the word you used, and also generous people I ever met. And his dad, then I met his dad subsequently a few years later, and he was the same. I think besides family and friends, he was the first person who showed me true generosity.
Right.
So I would believe that he probably did give it to you instead of sell it to you.
Yeah, and it goes with what he's become and what he's achieved. And it's the jiu-jitsu is one thing, but I think it takes a certain character to do that. Sometimes it's not very apparent with some people, but that's the great thing about jiu-jitsu as well. It's the character it takes. And it might not always be obvious. It might not be apparent with that individual sometimes, but to get that black belt's a big thing. So thanks for the encouragement. I've got to get that thing one day.
So, yeah, Martin, tell me a little bit more, like you when you were back in Brazil that time, because that must have been a golden time, as you said. Roletto was training there, I'm sure. Marcio Fertoza was training. Carlinhos was probably still teaching a few of the classes. Roger was on the mats. That must have been amazing.
Oh, I actually injured my back when I was out there.
Oh,
And I did
jeez.
some rehab with a lady called Jacqueline. I'm sure some of the gringos who went over there to train, they might remember her. And she was ahead of her time with the rehab, with the spine stuff. And I was out of that 7 months for about 2.5 months. I couldn't really train properly. I could barely walk at one point. So what I did is I'd take pen and paper and I'd sit in the corner of the gym. And it was almost a blessing that I was injured because I got to study how these guys fight. You watch Holletta, which means roulette wheel, and that's how he fights. He would fight with a guard, and he'd be upside down, and they'd throw the guys off in different directions, you know, like a ball on the table.
That's cool.
And getting to witness that, all those champions, those great guys together before they split off. I remember Hodja Gracie in, well, it was 2001, and he was just kind of establishing himself as one of the men there, if you like, at that time. Uh-huh. And I remember Godo came over and just beat him up because he beat a couple of the other stars. I'm not going to name names. And I was surprised. I'm like, oh, wow, Hodja just beat him.
Yeah.
And after that, Godo walked over. And in a very nice way, he just said, look, you're not there quite yet, you know? It was awesome.
I can't just really imagine that. But I do often think that that is one of the main differentiating factors of why Roger was like a cut above everyone else. Is like he basically was forged in a hotter crucible. Like he was this young kid, 15, 16, and he was getting bashed up by Gordo, by the Almeida brothers, by Marcio Fatoza, by all these older, bigger, stronger dudes, you know. And then when he grew into his size and his strength and he like got his man strength, it was like he had all that advantage of having trained with those guys when he didn't have those attributes. And then you add the attributes in and he's just a force to be reckoned with. So that's
and
really
he took
cool.
such a pasting as well, Nick, in those days. Like he would literally, he'd be on the mats all day. Just, I mean, it was rough. And if you look at his fights, his world championship fights, you look at when he fought Terre, for example, when people take his back, he's done very well, partly because of his defense game. And mm-hmm. I think it was those early years, not only starting young and all the obvious things that we know, but just working his defense all the time, having such a stable of top guys to work out his defense strategies.
Definitely.
So that was his base. And I know that's what we're always meant to do. But especially in today's jiu-jitsu, when I go back and I roll with people at my level, sometimes I'm surprised at the lack of basics, mm-hmm. you know, just the basic pins, because my technique's terrible. I can't do barambolos and all this kind of stuff, even passing guard. But some of my basics are quite good when it comes to side position mm-hmm. and holding person in position, using the right shoulder technique and things like this. So
it's probably because you trained with Mauricio, I would guess.
Yes,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. No one's got better basics and better fundamentals than that guy.
Do you know what was also good to see, Nick?
Tell me.
I saw Mauricio spar Nino Schembri.
Oh, wow. You know Nino? Yeah, of course, yeah.
Right. And I couldn't work out why he was always smiling in the World Championships and he'd have a submission jump out of it again. And then I realized he liked to smoke weed now and again. And it all made sense. I was like, aha. But Nino was at the top of his game and Mauricio, in his late 40s, I think it was, and he sparred against it and you could see the caliber of Mauricio's jiu-jitsu. It was an amazing fight, and not many people were there. I think it was the middle of the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And to see that was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, look, Mauricio is fucking one of the best ever, dude. Like, no mm-hmm. doubt about it. Funny enough, about Nino Schembri, I remember reading once that dude... Okay, look, he's a bit out there. There's no doubt about it. I'm sure he'll be the first to admit he's a little bit out there. He did his share of drugs, and I was told, it was either told or I read it somewhere, that he used to compete on acid, dude. Like,
is that what it was?
Yeah, legit, he would compete. He would take like a couple of hits of LSD and go out there and compete in these big comps. And I mean, still to this day, I don't know how he did that, because sure, I've done a couple of things on acid, but nothing like that, bro. You know, it's like unbelievable.
I don't do that stuff, but if you look at jiu-jitsu as an art form and you look at some of the other art forms that have been brought to a high level through LSD,
uh-huh.
it kind of makes sense. He was quite revolutionary in some of the stuff he was doing.
I think he doesn't get enough credit, that guy. You know, like, he is one of the most revolutionary jiu-jitsu players ever. If you look at, I mean, now because the pool of players is so big, there's obviously people doing, there's a bigger pool to draw from, so there's more people that stand out, right? But back then, there was no one fighting like that. No one had that style, like that crazy kind of creative, pull a trick out the bag when you're in the worst possible place.
Right.
Use your flexibility to do these insane inverted counters. There was no one fighting like that, and I will always respect that guy for that. Apparently, he was an absolute...
You know what? He was a very sweet guy as well.
Tell me a bit more. I mean, I never met him, but when you say he's a sweet guy,
no, it's funny. I'm just thinking, because I was living there, I actually got to know a lot of these stars, and I remember Nino was one of the kindest guys. He would do things for free and say, oh no, go and see them, it's my friend, he'll look after you, that kind of thing. And it's that behind the scenes stuff, you know, when no one's looking or watching, and it's just that, and he doesn't need to be helpful or kind. Yeah, I remember he was pretty cool.
That's
and he was
awesome.
really into Elvis as well.
Yeah. That always kind of intrigued me that he was such a big fan of Elvis. I remember I went to train at Gracie Baja for a little bit in about 2004, it was 2003
Right.
maybe, and it was already different to how you describe it, because all those dudes had left, they'd all gone to the US. Carlinhos wasn't really teaching that much, he'd do the odd class, but like
Okay.
it was already starting to change a little bit. So you really saw the golden era, man. That's what a blessing.
Yeah, it was wonderful. And my buddy Steve Campbell, Stealth BJJ, he stayed out there. So he was, I think, 8 years he lived there and got his black belt.
Yeah, dude,
and he actually,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty cool. He actually ended up, he got bronze medal. He got, I think, Masters 1 in the World Championships at black belt. He got a bronze medal out there. And he's a good friend now, and he's hilarious because he looks like a librarian. He's like, his nickname's Foguinho, which means little fire.
Uh-huh.
My nickname in Brazil was Tropeço, which is Lurch from the Adams family.
Great.
But yet Steve is so unassuming. He's got like a master's degree in computer science and a degree in maths. And he's really how jiu-jitsu should be. He's like, he's got this real technical game. And if you go to his academy, the guys are also quite cerebral and very technical, and they're also smashing it. His guys are winning in the championships and the Europeans and everything else.
Oh, that's great. You've told me about him for years, and I've never had the opportunity to meet him. I think next time I'm back in England, I'd love to meet him. I'll come see you and meet him at the same time. Yeah, Brazil is an interesting one, man. I did a couple of trips out there to train, and if I'm honest, it's not my favorite place in the world, but I can see the I can see the attraction, and I think there's a certain energy there that I want to try to capture. That, you know, I did that those two videos. The first one was the Spirit of Jiu-Jitsu that was shot in Thailand, and the second one was the Soul of Jiu-Jitsu, which was shot in Japan, and I think the third one one day will be shot in Brazil, and it will be called the Heart of Jiu-Jitsu, because there's this certain, I can't even put my finger on it, but there's this kind of like a, it's this crazy jungle kind of chaotic intensity that few places I've been to have. And I'd love to try to capture that, and also what that means in jiu-jitsu for that film. So one day I'd like to head back out there to film
that. Sounds great, man.
Yeah, maybe
you've definitely got the connections to get it together.
Yeah, maybe we'll get you to come out, dude, and you can be the tour guide, because I'm sure you saw some of the the darker sides of the city.
I'm all settled down now. I can't do another Brazil trip. It was like, you know, I actually went out there with a girlfriend, and I think, you know, they should tell you really at customs, you know, this is the land of the thong bikini. Don't come here with a girlfriend.
Don't bring sand to the beach, as they say.
Now you're married as well. I don't think we can go to Brazil. I think we have to leave that one off the card.
Well, speaking of me being married and you, are you married yet?
Engaged.
Engaged. Okay. Still hedging your bets, I see.
So what's that? I've just moved back to the UK. So we were planning to move out there. I was living in New York for 6 years, and I've just moved back just over a year ago, so a year and a half ago. Back to Manchester, so we're settled here.
Okay, cool. Yeah. You know, I one of the things, the stories I want to share about you is, so a lot of people, well, there was a time when I was living on the road, just traveling from country to country, teaching jiu-jitsu, and I had a pretty free and some might say, because it looks that way from the outside, glamorous lifestyle. And what, and they'd always say, oh, what's that like? That must be so amazing. And what I'd always wanted to do was say, okay, you got to meet my friend Martin, right? Because obviously this is an audio-only podcast, but I mean, it's probably a part of your life. Whenever I discussed it with you, you never seemed to be really proud of it, but you were for a long time an international male model. And I used to look at your lifestyle. I remember when you and I used to go out, we used to go to parties and stuff, and I'd introduce you to people and I'd say, this is my friend Martin, and he gets laid like a rock star, which used to piss you off. But it was the
truth. Well, because it wasn't true. I was like, oh, I wish I was that guy. I'd go out on the pole and I'd always end up going, I'd be the last guy on the dance floor. I think it was probably something to do with my dancing. I think if I'd have just sat up and stayed, have had more luck.
Look, I'm going to say straight up, in my younger days, I was a reasonably good-looking dude, but whenever I went out with you, I always felt like the elephant man. In fact, I have a story of us being at a bar, and this girl started talking to us, and she said, she was looking up at you because you're so tall, and she was like, wow, I mean, you are just something else. And then she looked at me, and she went, you're pretty nice as well, but geez, you. And she turned back to you. And I was just like, God damn, I'm not going out with this dude again. So you flew around the world. I remember, like, you met me in Cape Town, my home city, and you were there. Right. You were there for a season because there's a big modeling scene out there. And you just, you like bought a motorbike, this cool chopper style motorbike, and spent like 6 months of summer in South Africa riding around. Were you living in like some kind of model house?
Yeah, I was flown in for a job from a German company, and I'll never forget it actually, because I fell asleep. I'd not slept, and I got next to the, I hadn't slept, so I was by the pool, and I thought, right, I'm just going to catch 20 minutes, but it was boiling hot. So I fell asleep with these sunglasses on, my shorts on, and woke up like 3 hours later.
Jesus.
And I was absolutely bright red as a lobster. And I speak fluent German. I was working for a German client there. So I tried everything. I was trying ice baths. I went to the chemist and got aloe vera, all this stuff. I think it made it worse and brighter.
Oh, geez.
And then I had to turn up the next morning for the shoot, and I just couldn't get rid of it. So they pay all this. I was working with this other supermodel guy as well from America. And they put a lot into this production. They fly there. And here you are, the talent. You turn up, and I've got these big panda eyes. So they start talking. They start talking in German, thinking I'm an English guy and I don't understand. And they go in, "Diese verdammte Inselaffe," like these damned island apes. So, that's what they call the English. Not a lot of people know that, and I found that out.
That's priceless.
And they were talking in the car on the way to the thing, and I was like, and I didn't know what to do. I was like, well, I can't tell them I speak German now because it was awkward.
Yeah.
So that was it. Somehow I didn't get fired by my German agent. And 2 weeks turned into, I think it was 4 months or something. And we had a great time. And it was just great to have you there as well and have that jiu-jitsu connection. And yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, that was cool. So, I mean, I guess where I wanted to lead with that, it's hysterical because I'll be, I mean, it's changed a little bit now because you're not doing that so much as a career. But sometimes, during my time on the road, I would be in Germany, for example. And I would open a magazine and there'd be a picture of you advertising something. Or then I'd be in the States and I'd be watching a commercial on TV and see you. And it was kind of cool. It was like, our friendship, we were in different places and we weren't that in close communication. And it was kind of cool for me, dude.
It's kind of dodgy. So you're going around that you were looking me up. Wherever you were in the world, you were trying to find pictures of me in magazines and TV commercials.
Okay. Can I bring up the magazine cover to just balance that out?
Oh, man. Do you know what? The agent at the time told me it was a good idea. He went, look, David Beckham has been on the cover of this gay magazine. He says, it's the only way you get a cover these days. You should do it. So I did it. And then the jiu-jitsu community found out about it. What was it? What was his name? John, Irish lad. He was a funny guy. Uh-huh. Anyway, he found a copy of it and thought it would be hilarious to show everyone at the gym. So I couldn't get a wrestling partner for weeks.
That is absolutely priceless. I can picture that happening as well.
It wasn't at the time.
So, I mean, I guess I want to ask you, Martin, I want the truth now, dude. So you, this international male model, traveling the world, you know, making a reasonably good amount of money. And I always used to look at you and just think, dude, in my next life, I want to come back in that position. I want to be a male model just doing that, like printing all these hot chicks, traveling the world, getting paid. I mean, was that lifestyle fulfilling? Be honest with me.
At the time, I didn't appreciate just how amazing it was. When you're doing a proper job, if you like, I mean, there was times in a month where I'd only have a few days off and I was barely sleeping and I was traveling from one country to the other. But that was very rare. Normally you'd work, typically I was working about 2 days a week and earning more than a doctor. You know, I was in like a six-figure sum for a few years, just having an absolute ball, because once you learn how to get it down, I mean, you're right. I never talk about this. If people ask me what I did, I would always say something else and other stuff. And it's, I've never been that comfortable with being a male man who models, you know. I just think of the Zoolander film. It is a bit silly, but looking back on it, and you know, what I did was incredible. To do that full time for years and all the things I've seen and all the good times we had was wonderful. Yeah, so it was glamorous, it was incredible, the parties, the people I met, it was a great time. Yeah, I was very lucky.
And then, I mean, you moved away from it because you just felt like, I want to use, because you're obviously a smart guy, you just decided I need to use my brain, or what was the impetus for moving away from it?
I'm old. No, I guess what it was, I was never happy with it as a job, as that's what I do. I started to earn good money once I actually decided that it was my job, you know, and I had a conversation with my dad. He says, no, look, this is your job. This is what you do. And it was funny, after that little conversation with my dad, then I started to do actually a lot better. You know, I took it a little bit more seriously.
That's interesting. I have a story that I'd like to relate. I've been wanting to relate on the podcast for a while. You know, I've just moved here to the States, and I have this next door neighbor who I don't know very well. In fact, I don't know him at all. I've had one conversation with him. And I remember this was about 2 months ago. He was standing on his property, and I saw him over the fence, and I said, hey, how you doing? And we started chatting. And it turned into quite an in-depth conversation. Turns out he was a computer programmer, which I know a little bit about. And I said to him, he's retired now. He's like, he must be in his 60s. I said to him, I don't even know why I asked this question, but I said, do you ever just whip out the computer and do a little bit of coding for fun? You know, like now that you're retired. And I'll never forget. He just said to me, fuck no. He said, fuck no. He said, that was my job, and I was a professional. And he explained, he said, an amateur does something because they love it, right? The root of the word amateur, I can't remember exact what he told me, but it's something like amare, which means love. And he says, that's why I've got a guitar. I'm a guitar amateur. I'm an amateur playing guitar. So I whip out my guitar and I'll strum because I love doing it and it's fun. He said, he said, a professional, the root of the word professional is professor, which means to talk about, right? He said, a professional talks about the thing that he does professionally. That's his job. That's his work. And man, that conversation helped me so much. It helped me so fucking much, because I think there's this middle class kind of mental virus, which is, You only have to be doing things that you're passionate about. You have to follow your passion, chase your passion. And man, if you do any kind of passion for long enough and do it properly and take it to a high level, you don't love it all the time. There is no way. It doesn't matter if you're a porn star or a male model or a fucking rap superstar or a movie actor. There comes a point where what you're doing is fucking horrible and difficult, and there's parts of it you don't like. And that conversation with that guy helped me so much, because it allowed me to realize, or it let me allow myself to not enjoy jiu-jitsu all the time. I was like, oh, that's okay. Yeah. I don't have to enjoy teaching jiu-jitsu all the time. You know, this is my job. I'm a professional. This is what I do. And it was such a profound realization for me. And it sounds like that conversation you had with your dad was a similar point in your life.
Absolutely. And if you want to be competitive and get to the, you know, be the best in your field, it doesn't matter what the job is. You're absolutely right. You need to be, it's all about strategy and competitiveness. And that's what it is about. And to be fair, when I did well in the modeling, it was because I treated it that way. And it did become a job, absolutely. So you're always preparing. I mean, guys will make light of it, like, oh, you just, and then you can have a good run and do really well and be the face of someone for a while and do great. But the guys, especially older guys like me, who's mostly doing it through his 30s, you did have to be professional about it. And that's what the clients would pay. They would pay that you turned up and you knew how to speak to the clients. You knew when to shut up and you did your job. You know,
that makes sense.
Absolutely, that. Yeah,
I think it's tied in with the basic premise behind the book The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. Have you read that book?
I have.
So, I mean, it's the same Brilliant. Thing. It's like there has to come a point where you flick that switch. If you want to excel in anything, if you want to achieve in anything, you need to come to that fucking point of crystallization where you say to yourself, I am a professional. This is my work and I will do it to the absolute best of my ability. I won't just fucking wing it or fuck around or just kind of like riff. I'm not an amateur anymore. I'm a professional. And I think that,
Nick, that's why I commend you on what you've done, because it is that fine line. And I remember when I started modeling and I was struggling for years, and my mum's friends would say, when's he going to get a proper job? Then suddenly I was taking my mother on holiday to find hotels and everything, and suddenly it seemed okay.
Uh-huh.
And you've done this too. You know, you've taken jiu-jitsu and got this whole angle on it, this area that you're so good. Because we used to chat in the old days. It's funny we're doing this podcast now, but when we'd meet up, I love the fact we'd get into deep conversation. We'd be talking about books and literature and concepts and philosophy and fighting and silly stuff and comedy. But it was good quality, deep conversation straight off the bat. As soon as we met up, and you would also ask great questions, which is, I think, why you're a good interviewer, is you can be doing something, involved with something, and you can be spend time with somebody and they won't even clearly ask what it is you do or why you do it or what it's about. And you were very good at stage level. When I was doing nutrition for a long time and into hormone optimization and doing blood work with clients and all that kind of stuff. And you would say, right, Martin, give me the three main things for this. I remember we met up in Notting Hill at a bar and we're in the middle of a party and it was a great night. And then you took your 5 minutes and you came up to me and we're having such a laugh and a good time. But you changed and you went, Martin, let's just take 10 minutes. Tell me what you're up to. And you looked me in the eye. And I find this a trait of successful people. I had a celebrity around at the house the other day and we're having a laugh as well. Same time, she goes, oh, right, yeah, what is it you do? And I made a joke of it to make light of it because of the atmosphere. And then she looked me in the eye and she said, no, what do you really do? Tell me what you do and how it's different. You know, that kind of thing.
I understand.
And I thought, that's cool. Because she wants to know what it is you do. She's interested in other people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's so cool. I'm reminded of an expression which is, did you ever notice how people who want to tell you about their religion are seldom interested in yours? And I think that is, you can expand that out to, that to me is generally the definition of, or I can broadly categorize people into two types. The one is the person who wants to talk about themselves, right? They're like, mm-hmm. and they're usually, in my opinion, not the highest caliber of people. The guy who's trying to tell you about his achievements and, mm-hmm. and how smart he is and what he's done. And I think the people in the United States in current day all know someone in a high position of power like that. And I'll leave them to read between the lines. But the other side, the other kind of person is the exact type of person you've just described, like that woman you met, who rarely is interested in others, and they've turned that lens from themselves onto other people, and it's just a happier way to live life, man, because you're not so goddamn self-absorbed all the time like we've all been at one point.
Yeah, we all do it, and it is inspiring. It's true, when you're around kind of great successful people you'd look up to in many ways, often they'll just listen. Mm-hmm. You'll meet them and they'll be surprised how much they want to talk about mm-hmm. You, and it is inspiring. Yeah,
Martin, my brother, that was safely say one of the episodes of the podcast, and I think this is episode 43 or 44. It's one mm-hmm. of the ones I've enjoyed the most, so thank you so much for your time, my brother.
We didn't even touch the surface. We've got the whole New York stories, all the John Danaher stuff.
Well,
we
got part two for sure, my brother.
Yeah.
Is there somewhere people can get a hold of you if they want to either train with you? Or I know you treat people who have back issues.
Yeah, I specialize in spinal rehabilitation, so I'm based in Manchester. It was just about having a good chat with you today. I've enjoyed it. My website is Health by Martin.
Okay.
If people want to find out more about me or get in touch.
Okay.
But really, it was just nice to do this and be recorded because we could do this all day.
For sure, my brother. Thank you again for your time and blessings on you, my friend.
Nice one, Nick. Cheers, mate.
I had so much fun doing that show. I just I just love talking to Martin, just love being around the guy. He's just such a good human being. You know, many years ago, I was doing a course about masculinity and how to actualize yourself as a man. And, you know, one of the things the person running the course said is that he was saying, have you ever been around someone who just gave you the feeling that no matter what happened, everything was going to be okay? It just had this solid presence. And I always thought to myself, I want to be that kind of person, that when people are around me, they just feel everything's going to be okay, everything's going to be cool. And Martin was one of the first people I ever met in my life who I felt that around. He just has this solid presence, and he's playful and just a cool guy, a cool dude, a guy's guy. I really have so much respect for that guy, and he's just a fantastic human being. And I find when I interact with people like that, I can actually feel myself being lifted up to a higher level. So, Martin, thank you so much for your time. If any of you guys know people like that and you want them as guests on the show, please hit me up. You can send me an email, nick@jujitsubrother.com, and we'll try to make that happen. Until next week, guys, peace out.